So today I'm in Bristol with Ben Evans. Now, Ben, tell me what your official job title is.
So my official job title is Diocesan Communications Officer, which, do you want me to explain a little bit more about what that involves?
Yeah, go on.
It's a mixture of, essentially it's anything that involves communicating. So whether it's communicating with churches about what perhaps our vision is, what the bishops are saying, through to helping churches with things like social media and websites, fielding media inquiries, sending out press releases, essentially anything which requires somebody being told something, either internally or externally.
Okay, so where did we first meet?
I don't know, I think we first met, I think we probably bumped into each other at various events, but I was trying to think when we first kind of had contact. It was probably over email or phone, which is normally how I meet most people these days, sadly. There's not so much going out as people and names on an email, but I couldn't think of when it was. It was probably something to do with drinking tea and recording, I'm sure.
Probably. I've done quite a bit of drinking tea and recording. So, next question is, do you drink tea?
I do drink tea, not as much as I used to. I used to drink much more, but I have sugar in my tea and not in coffee. And I was finding that if I went somewhere, people would either not give me tea, not give me sugar, and I'd have that embarrassing, have you got any sugar? Or they would offer me sugar and put too much in. And so in the end, it was easier just to go, yeah, I'll have coffee because I don't have sugar. I can just have it as coffee. So that became my go-to rather than tea. But I do like a nice cup of tea.
I think you might be the only person I've met who has a sugar issue with tea.
Yeah.
I think it's much less common to have sugar in your tea now.
Well, I think this is it. And people don't realise when they offer you a tea and they just go, here's your tea. And you go, can I have some sugar with that? And then there's that awkward moment where they go through their cupboard. Trying to find sugar.
Yeah.
At least with coffee, you can just go, yeah, I have it white. And that's fine.
So what's your favourite cup of tea?
Well, my favourite cup of tea, which I don't have sugar in, is peppermint tea. I do like, I kind of starting to get into my fruit teas. My wife is a huge tea drinker. She won't even get up until she's had a cup of tea. But she has a wide selection, and I've found that fruit teas and peppermint tea are probably the ones I go for. So peppermint tea, definitely.
It's not proper tea.
Well,
it's not made from tea.
Well, I know, but it's as close as I get these days.
So the big question, which I've been asking everybody, is, and I have to get the words right now, how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I think there's a couple of things with that, really. One is, I mean, I think there is growth in certain churches. So it's easy, particularly with the media, often to point to. And I think churches, you know, the church, and by that I mean the wider church or denominations, finds it easy to point to in the UK, churches which are dying and are saying, oh, look, people aren't turning up so much. But I think there are churches which are genuinely growing. You've got these large churches, particularly in cities, which are seeing more and more people come in. But I think it's about more than just bums on seats. I think it's really a case of A, churches waking up and realising that they need to be going out into their communities. I think people don't come regularly to church in the same way. Even people who would say themselves as regular churchgoers are perhaps only going once or twice a month because of other commitments. But I think people are realising that actually it's about what they're doing in their communities, and I think we're seeing that happen more. Plus, I think there is a genuine desire still from people who don't go to church, who haven't got a Christian faith, wanting to know more about Christianity, who have a hunger to know more. So I think churches are waking up to that idea as well, that people are willing to talk about it, rather than kind of saying, here we are, you come to us and talk to us. Churches are realizing that we can go out. So I think the church has been sleeping, but I think it's on the verge of waking up to a different way of doing things and of re-engaging with people where they're at, rather than expecting people to come to us.
So can you think of some good examples of that sort of reaching out or activity?
Well, you've got, I mean, the usual things of things like food banks, but I think there's a lot of churches now setting up support groups. I know of a few, whether it's churches which are setting up cafes where people can come if they're on their own, or if they've got something like dementia, where they can come and feel supported. And it's not overtly saying, here is the what we believe, let's bring out the Bibles and study a verse, but more about, here we are to support you, we are acting in this Christian way of, you know, following Christ and his example of being available and of providing what people need. So I think there's that way of doing it. Plus, I think churches are becoming more aware of the world outside of the four walls. It's not just about that, like I say, not just about that worship on a Sunday. So you see churches which are going into schools, which are going into old people's homes, and kind of connecting with people at that level as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've got three additional questions.
I have got three additional questions.
If you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
I would change, I'd change the hierarchy, which by that I mean giving permission for everyone at every level to have a voice and to be heard with what they are thinking and where they are at with their faith. I think that's already happening in some respects with setting God's people free. I think there is now that acknowledgement that everybody is equal in God's eyes, everybody has validity, but I think there is still much too much of a deference within the Church of England of, this person is the vicar, therefore we all look to what they say. And I think we need to move away from that much, much more. That, I mean, I'm not advocating some sort of like anarchy in the churches and revolution and an uprising, but I think there is, and it doesn't come from above, it comes from the congregations, this assumption that if you're the vicar, if you're the bishop, and it increases the higher up you go, up the ecclesiastical ladder, that you must have all the answers. And I think when I've been to churches where vicars have admitted their vulnerabilities, when they've said, look, we don't have all the answers, we don't know how to do things sometimes, but you might, and you get that kind of equality, I think that is where you see church working well, because that reflects the whole idea of, we are all one body and we all have different parts to play. And I think sometimes we fall into the trap of, actually, we've got these structures and we have to adhere to these structures definitely, and therefore if you're the vicar, then you have the answers and we don't if we're in the congregation. And I think it would be great to see that kind of barriers kind of fall down a bit more.
I mean, one of the things, I'm nearing the end of my sabbatical now, so one of my questions is, how many things have ended up in the box waiting for the vicar to sort out?
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be quite an interesting question.
And I find often sending out communications that the automatic person to send it to is the vicar, but of course that's then expecting the vicar to be able to just work out who to delegate things to, and actually it'd be much better if other people who have different skills get that information.
So I wanted to talk to you about communication divides, and there are various issues about this. I've brought some of my own communication baggage to the table. So I've used email almost every day since 1989.
I didn't even think it went back that far.
Yes, it did. But it did. And I told my husband I was pregnant by email in 2002, and that didn't seem odd to me. Yeah. So I get really annoyed when people send me paper things. especially, you know, when people send me paper things which contain chocolates for my dog to eat. That happened once from a diocesan communication sometime. So I don't like paper. And some people use social media and some people don't. And some people can access the internet and some people can't. And yet perhaps some of those people are the people that the church is called to reach. So how do you think we should be tackling some of those issues in the church, and what might be some of the solutions? We've got 10 minutes of podcast, that's not all the solutions.
Okay, yeah, I'll try and sum it all up as quickly as I can.
Well, it doesn't have to be quick, but I realise it's an hour's question.
Yeah, I mean, it's a question that I think people in communications have been wrestling with, not just in the church, but across the board for many, many years. I think, to start with, churches have two tendencies that they have to deal with communication. They either can fit into the box of almost the Luddite, anything new that comes along, no, we're not going to change, we've always done it this way, we've always used paper, that's the only way we're going to do it. Or they go into, let's throw out everything that comes in, as soon as something new comes in, that's the new technology, let's go down that route. And you tend to find that, by and large, that people tend to kind of, as a church, go down one route or the other, and both create their own challenges. I think the danger comes where you try and just do it one particular way. We need to remember that all forms of communication are valid because people understand things in different ways, and people can take in information in different ways. Some people are visual, some people respond to kind of the oral side of things. Some people find it very easy to just pick up a phone and flick through emails. Other people don't. They can't work with a screen. You can't ignore, I think, for people who go down the route of, well, we've always used this way and we're not going to do any different. You can't ignore that, you know, we're in the 21st century. People are building communities online now. So Facebook, WhatsApp groups, that is the way that particularly, not just young people, but certain demographics are getting their information and are sharing and communicating with each other. By the same token, I think it's very easy to just go, well, Twitter's come out, we need to use Twitter. WhatsApp's come out, we need to use WhatsApp, without thinking about what is my message that I'm trying to get across. So I think too often churches focus on the platform, which is essentially just a tool to an end, rather than thinking, well, this is the message I need to get out. How is that particular audience going to respond better to it? So for example, if nobody's on Twitter, there's no point using Twitter because no one's going to read it. You need to find another way of sending it out. Equally, if you send stuff out on paper and the only way that a particular group of people get their information is from Facebook, again, you're not going to hit that audience. So it's more about knowing how your audience hear that message and then using that platform in order to speak to them. So I think what I'm kind of saying is, all forms of communication are valid, whether it's paper, phone, computer, but it's just being aware that different people read things in different ways and not putting too much emphasis on, well, that platform's better than that platform. They're all equal.
We did an exercise with the Mothers Union, the Dawson Mothers Union, a couple of years ago, and we got them into groups and we asked them how they had heard particular items of news, how they found things out, and we got them to write it down. And at the same time, I put on my personal Facebook a subset of the questions. And so I did that half an hour before we began the session. And then at the end of the session, I read out the answers. So I'd had maybe... I think I'd had something like 20 responses from my 50 Facebook friends, and most of them were kind of middle-aged women, my sort of age. And that could be the kind of target audience, you might think, for Mothers Union. Anyway, we went through all the data and it was quite interesting. And I then went to a trustees meeting and they said, okay, Janet, well, how are we going to communicate? And I'm like, we're going to communicate when you tell me who you want to tell what to, and then we have to pick. And that flummoxed them so much. Yeah. I think we never really managed to work out exactly what the answer to that question was. But that's really interesting. I mean, we have one of our congregations to whom we mainly communicate via Facebook. But we also have a banner and we also have leaflets. But it is time consuming for whoever's in charge of the communications.
There is that as well. There is that fact that you're having to basically communicate in more than one way and duplicating your job. I mean, I have been to churches where they say, well, we don't want paper printouts of the news anymore. We're just going to do it all via email, which is all well and good if everyone's on email. But you have to remember there are people who don't get email. And what message are you saying to them if you're saying, well, unless you get a computer and learn how to use email, you're not valid enough to receive this news? And that's where you have to kind of say, well, actually, we need to have both ways of doing it. You can reduce the number of newsletters that you have available to hand out, but you can't do away with them, because otherwise there's going to be people who don't hear what's important for them to hear. Mm. So, yeah, it's a huge issue, though, over what way. But I think you can never say one way is better. You can only say one way might be more suitable for the audience that you want to communicate to.
So you're the only person, you have a unique question.
Okay.
Which I haven't, which is, do you listen to podcasts? And if so, what are your favourites?
I'd probably describe myself as an occasional listener. I'll come on to why in a minute. But I mean, in terms of my favourites, so I'm very much a film fan. So I tend to listen to things like Wittertainment. So hello to Jason Isaacs, for those who listen to Wittertainment. Things like The Empire podcast, Den of Geek do a podcast now. So I tend to listen to those kind of things. But it comes down to how do you best, as an audience member, how do I pick up things? And I pick up things best when I read them rather than when I hear them. So if I hear something, it'll go in and probably come out the other side. Whereas if I read it, my brain actually engages and remembers it. So I'm more likely, if I want to read a feature about a film, I'll read it. I won't listen to it, because then I'll remember what I've read and go, oh, that's interesting, and okay, I can use that. Whereas if I hear it, it'll be like, oh, that was interesting, but I can find myself too easily distracted. I can't be distracted when I read, but if I'm listening to something, the number of times where I'll go, oh, I missed that, I need to rewind that and hear it again. My mind wandered.
Because there are a huge number of podcast listeners now. So I had kind of assumed that you would be one of those, being the communications person.
I mean, part of it is down to, as well, time. If I had a choice of things to do, podcast. I guess, you know, I'm in my 40s, so I've reached that point where I picked up the habits that I use, and podcast is too new for me to pick up a new habit of listening.
See, I generally listen to There's No Such Thing as a Fish whilst I'm sorting the washing, which is great because I have to do at least two things at once or I can't concentrate. So that's quite good for me. But I can see how if you're a visual person, podcasts aren't really going to necessarily be your thing.
No, and I think as well as that, I can't do more than one thing at once, hence why if I get distracted, I miss what I'm listening to. So my wife will listen to a lot of podcasts, and she can listen to a podcast while she's working. She can quite happily do the two. If I'm concentrating on something, as people who work with me will tell you, if they then tell me something, I have to stop what I'm doing and actively listen to them. I can't do two things at once. So if I'm listening to a podcast, I basically have to stop doing everything else and make sure I'm not distracted.
Right. Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting with regard to marketing podcasts.
Yes.
You need to market them to multitaskers.
Yes, or people who have time to stop and just listen.
So the last question, and it is out of order, I realise, but it is always the roundup question.
That's fine.
Is what is your favourite thing that begins with T?
So my favourite thing beginning with T is theatre.
Oh.
Yeah. Because so when I was about 10, I joined a Saturday morning drama workshop, studied theatre studies at university, and actually worked for a time as an actor. I was a professional actor, or semi-professional. I have an equity card and everything, although my equity card is Ben Hastings, because there was already a Ben Evans who was working. So I nicked my mum's maiden name to become Ben Hastings. But yeah, I've always loved drama, always loved theatre, loved acting. I've just come off of doing a show, which sounds very actory. I was helping out with sound for a local Amdram company, which proved interesting, as the final performance, the lead actor on stage halfway through had to slam a door shut and there was a painting, big wooden painting above the door on the set, which came off and basically caused so much damage to his head that the stage manager had to come on and stop the play so we could take him to hospital. Which, he's fine, other than a big bit of a stitching on his forehead. But yeah, it's never a dull moment in theatre, which I think is why I like it as well. You never know what's going to happen. Normally not that exciting, but...
Oh, that's. I think that's the third vote for theatre.
Is it?
I think so, yes. So
Good. Yeah. Hopefully it'll win.
We'll see.
After tea.
I haven't done the adding up yet. So, Ben, thank you ever so much for speaking to me today.
My pleasure.